Saturday morning master that is 2 weeks from yesterday, so it'll be February 23rd. But today, very excited to welcome Gil Moss, who will be speaking on Telling Secrets Loudly, Modular Earth Retaining Public Keys.
Hello. Thanks. So, a lot of times you want to tell a secret, but if you want to do it over a computer, like over the internet, it's often hard to tell a secret by... When you want to tell a secret to your friend, you can just whisper in their ear because you know it's them. But let's say you want to buy something on Amazon. Here's you at your computer. That's computer. And so if you type in your credit card number and press buy, the signal needs to go to a router, and then maybe to another router, and then another router, and then eventually it gets to Amazon.com, to their servers, where they process your credit card number and go tell the bank to send them the money for your order. All these routers are independent. They're not owned by Amazon. They're not owned by you. And so someone who wants to eavesdrop can go plug their computer into one of these routers and see the messages that go through it. So it's sort of like if you wanted to send your credit card number to Amazon and you wrote it down on a postcard and sent it and put it in the mail. Every mailman who handled that postcard can just look at it and see the credit card number. So, how can we send a secret in public like that? It's sort of like if I were to choose one of you and I had to tell you a secret and I just stood up here and said something out loud that everyone could hear. If everyone can hear it, how can I communicate a secret to just that one person? So, the way to do this is to have a shared secret. So, for example, let's say Alice and Bob are going to appear a lot in this talk because their names begin with A and B. So let's say Alice and Bob both took Math 343 at UT, and that's where they met. So let's say Alice is you and Bob is Amazon.com. And so Alice wants to send her credit card number to Bob. Let's say her credit card number is 7. So credit card numbers are 16 digits, but for now let's just say it's 1. It's 7. So then what Alice could do to Bob, so let's say the only way Alice and Bob can communicate is by shouting in a crowded room like this. Well, how can Alice use this shared secret to tell Bob her credit card number? Well, one way to do it might be to say, Alice could say, "Hey, Bob, you remember that math class we took at UT where we met? Yeah. Well, remember the number of that class? Okay. You got it." So she hasn't said the number. She's just referred to the class, referred to the secret. Now she could say, okay, now take 350, subtract that number. That's my credit card number. So now who in the room knows Alice's credit card number? She knows it. It's 7. Does Bob know it? Yeah, because when Bob gets that information, Bob says, okay, we took Math 343 together, so I just need to subtract. So Bob does this. He takes 350, and he subtracts the number of the class, and he says, okay, got it, Alice. Now I know your credit card number. Now I'll ship you your present. So this is called their shared secret. It's called a shared secret number. So if you've ever been like setting up a network or something, you might see the letters SSN somewhere. I thought it was cool when I learned. I thought it was cool when I learned that that's what it meant, SSN. So that's how the majority of secrets are passed on the internet. There's two computers establish a shared secret number, and then they use that number to get to other numbers that they want to communicate. Secret numbers like 7. They use the shared number, and they send some public number like 350, and then they have some process involving the shared secret number to get to the private number that they want to communicate. So let's say there's an eavesdropper sitting in on this conversation. What would they have to do to crack this, to figure out what Alice's credit card number was? How many possible... Well, first of all, I mean, the credit card number was 7. They didn't know what this number was, so how could they crack the code? If you're a hacker, how would you hack this interchange between Alice and Bob? Does anyone have any ideas? Yeah?
You could probably hack the entire UT system because you heard that they took the same math class, so you could just search up which class they took.
That's true. That's one way to do it. So suppose UT system were secure. You didn't know how to hack that. That's a very good idea. Suppose it weren't the math class they took together. Suppose they were neighbors when they were children. And they say the number of the house that was across the street and down the block. So you don't know what, but you don't know which block. So it's really only they know it. They're the only ones who know this number. Do you have an idea for?
Yeah.
Yes. Probably since this is some imaginary world where credit card numbers come with you one digit wrong, that there would be non-combinations.
That's true. So if you knew the credit card number was one digit, you just try 0 through 9. Very good. What if it were 16 digits? Then that's a lot of numbers to try. So the same process would work with a 16-digit number. You just subtract, you find some slightly bigger 16-digit number that's 343 higher than your 16-digit number and subtract 343, so you still got it. Do you have an idea?
I was just going to say ask them at some other time.
Social.
Yeah, just when they're not suspecting. Good. Yeah, no, these are all good answers. This idea, I think, was the most systematic one, where you can just guess all the credit card numbers. Try each one until you get it. Because there's only if it's only one digit, there's only 9 choices. Okay, so if it's a 16-digit credit card number, that's a lot of time. That's 16 digits, that's a lot of choices for numbers. But if you know that all the math courses at UT have 3-digit numbers, then that's only 3 digits to try. How many possibilities are there for 3-digit numbers, for all 3-digit numbers? There are 999 possibilities. Yeah?
Isn't it 899 because you can't use 0 through 99?
So you can use... It can be 0, 0, 0. Well, actually, no. Let's say it can't be 0, 0, 0. It can be 0, 0, 1. 002. So let's say we can have zeros. Good, very good. So there's 999 possibilities to guess for this math course number. Modern computers can do that in like seconds, with less than a second. But what if? So if you've ever heard of 128-bit encryption, that 128-bit encryption key. Is a shared secret number that has 128 bits of information, which corresponds to, so 128 bits corresponds to about 38 digits. And if you have a 38-digit number, how many trial and error runs does your computer have to do to get there? This many. Let's see. I'm going to keep writing nines for a while. I'm going to write 38 nines. And so eventually I'll stop writing nines. But if you wanted to just try like a basic subtraction guess and check thing, for each possible 38-digit shared secret key, it would take you about the age of the Earth. So it would take you billions of years. And by that time, Alice's money has passed on to her ancestors. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be
her descendants?
So what if you like wrote a computer to do that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even if you did, it's got to try all these. I mean, computers are really fast, but they're not infinitely fast. They do take a little tiny fraction of a second to check something. You know, so if the computer, let's say the computer wanted to check, let's see, is 162, is that the shared secret number? Well, that takes a fraction of a second for it to check and try that hack. And it's got to try that for each one of, for this many things. And so that's what takes it so long. It takes a tiny fraction of a second to try each time. It's got to try it this many times, so it's going to take the age of the Earth. It's going to take billions of years. So,
and now I got it.
Good. So if you have 128 bits of a 128-bit encryption key, and only you and only Alice and Bob know it, then they can pass secrets pretty effectively. And that's how a lot of the encryption works on the internet. And so this is sort of, if you're going to try to encrypt a message, this is the goal, is to create a shared secret number like this, because they can be pretty secure. Yes? You'd use it to have, so this is a three-digit number. You use this 38-digit number for the same thing that you use this number for, to pass a secret. What's that? Yeah, they use it the same way they use the 343 right here. They say, okay, start here, use the number, use the secret number, the 38-digit number, and then they pass a public message, like 350, and then they say, okay, now subtract the secret number. That's my credit card number. Ah, not really, because it's only one number. So this is how many possibilities. So this is how many possibilities there are. For that number. But once you know the number, once you have it, it's easy to subtract. So once you have the number, it's quick to just say, okay, take 350, subtract my number, that's my credit card number. Good. Are there any other questions? So this is the holy grail of encryption, is to have this shared secret number. So what this talk is going to be about is, what if Alice and Bob didn't know each other? What if they didn't meet at a math class at UT? What if they weren't neighbors growing up? How can they create this shared number by yelling across the room? They're total strangers, but they're going to create this shared secret by yelling out loud across the room.
That's not very secret.
I know. It seems like a paradox. It seems like it can't work. Right? Like, how can they, just by shouting things out across a crowded room, create a shared secret that only they know? I mean, it seems like everyone else should know it too, if they're shouting it across the room. I mean, so is there anyone for whom this does not seem strange? That you can shout across a crowded room so that everyone can hear everything you say to a total stranger and create a shared secret between you that only you two know. A shared secret number, even. It seems impossible. But
suppose you did like a cup to a line, and talk in the cup and receiver thing.
Right, but there is no cup in a line, because on the internet everyone can put their ear to your line and hear what you're saying. It's got to go through routers, so that you can't have cups and lines. So we have to figure out a way to do this, and it's possible. Yes?
They could make up a secret language.
But as they're making up the language? I mean, they're total strangers. They didn't have time to make it up before they got there. So as they're creating a language, everyone else can hear, you know, as they're writing a dictionary for that language, everyone else can hear them and take notes and learn the language with them. It's sort of right. That is sort of the idea, yeah. Yeah, they're trying to communicate their credit card number. Let's say everyone knows that, okay, Alice and Bob are going to try to create a shared secret, and they're even going to send each other their credit card numbers. So they know that this is, they can get all their money if they do this. Did you have a question or idea? They're all, everyone's got to speak the same language. I'm being difficult here, but it's impressive that this idea, it's pretty clever. Does anyone else have any, like, wanted to shout out some ideas of how they might do this? Good. If you knew it, it would be, then that would defeat the purpose of this talk, so. Okay. So, okay, I have a slight hint, sort of. What if they were allowed to process the public information in private? So when you shout across a room to someone, if someone shouts to me, 4, everyone can hear 4, but what I can do is I can say, all right, I'm going to multiply 4 by my favorite special secret number that only I know. Like, let's say my favorite number is 20. I've done that in my head, so I get 80. And I'm the only one in the room who knows the number 80 is in my head, because no one can see inside of me. So remember that throughout this process, we are allowed to do things in our heads alone that other people can't see. No talking ahead of time. Everyone is strangers in the room. They first met in the room. But this idea that we can process public information in private is going to be important for solving this paradox. Okay. So now here's really the main idea, is that we need to, first of all, be able to process public information in private, and we need that process to be irreversible. So if someone shouted, let's say Alice is on the other side of the room and I'm Bob. If Alice shouted to me 4, and I privately in my head multiplied that by my favorite secret number, which is 20, I'll get 80, and I'll shout, 80! Well, then everyone in the room would know what I did. They would know, oh, Bob multiplied by 20. Because they could just divide 80 by 4. So that private process, even though I did it inside my head and no one could see me do it, if I shout out the result of it, they were able to undo. Because if it's just multiplication, if that's the only process that I'm doing in my head, people can just divide and undo it. Good question. Right. So if I say, okay, I'm going to multiply, and then I shout out 80, then they're going to know, okay, it was 20 that he multiplied by. So people need to know, first of all, you need to have a process. If I were able to have a process that were irreversible, even if people knew the process, they couldn't, knowing the number 80, get back to the number 4. So multiplication is not a good candidate here, because it's easily reversible just by dividing. Yeah. Good. Very good. Well, that's an excellent question. That would be difficult to reverse, but remember, we do have computers which can check things like three-digit numbers really fast. So multiplying by two numbers, yeah, that's a good idea. That's one way that they could, that is a possible thing. I think computers could check all the possibilities fast enough that wouldn't be secure in the modern era, but that is a good idea, multiplying by two numbers, because there's lots of different ways you can multiply two numbers to get the same number. For example, 2 times 2 and 4 times 1. Good, good. I'm glad I got you guys thinking about this. So just to illustrate this idea of a private process that can't be undone, that we do inside of our heads with inputs from that's public information, I'm going to do a demonstration with mixing paint. Because when you mix, let's say we have thousands of colors. There's thousands of colors out there, right? Like taupe and mauve and fuchsia. There's lots of colors. And if you take paint and you mix it together, once it's all mixed, you can't tell what went into it. You could say it's a little pinkish, it's got a little greenish in it too, but you don't know which precise colors went into it. So the idea of mixing paint, that's kind of an irreversible process. So we're going to use that for our demonstration of how to do this, how to create this shared secret key. So I'm going to need 2 volunteers. Okay, how about you? And how about a girl? Someone to be like Alice and Bob. There's any girls want to volunteer? Great, awesome. So you need to come on down. Oh, and we're also going to have a malicious eavesdropper who's going to be Karen. Karen is going to be our malicious eavesdropper. I don't want anyone to feel like the bad guy here. So Karen, I'd like you to sit in the middle chair. What's your name?
Gabriel.
Gabriel, nice to meet you. So Gabriel, would you sit in this chair? And what's your name?
Moonbeam,
nice to meet you. Have a seat in that chair. All right. So Gabriel is going to try to communicate with Moonbeam in a public way and create a shared secret color. So they're going to mix some paints together and create a shared secret color. But everything they mix, Karen is going to be able to see. So here's how once they've mixed it. Okay. So first I'm going to have Gabriel come up and come into his paint closet in his mind. So Gabriel, why don't you come over here? And I'm going to have him choose a private secret color. So for this, I need Karen and Moonbeam to stand up and turn around, because this is now happening in Gabriel's mind in private. So could you face away from the screen. Guys, thanks. Okay, so here's the paint closet of Gabriel's mind. Let's see. So everyone in the audience can see what's going on in Gabriel's head. So Gabriel, what you need to do now is you need to choose your favorite secret private color. So they all have names here.
So I just choose from one.
You just need to point at it, basically. But don't say it out loud. Okay, so we're going to write this down just so he remembers. So this is Gabriel's. Okay. So Gabriel's now, and so now you can go back to your seat. And now, okay, now everyone can turn back around. So all that happened here is Gabriel just chose his favorite secret color. This is not something that he said out in private, so this is just inside of his head. Okay, now Moonbeam, it's your turn to choose a private secret color. And notice that Karen doesn't know anyone's color. It's private and it's secret. So you get to... says that if you move the mouse over, the name comes up. So just pick a name. Cool. Awesome. So I'm going to write it down for you. Excellent choice. So keep this with you and keep it secret. Don't show it to Karen. She's trying to eavesdrop. Okay, good. So now both Gabriel and Moonbeam have chosen their shared secret color. Now you guys can sit back down and face face the world of colors. This, nothing has happened. People have just chosen their private color. So now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to announce a single public color. How about teal? So everyone can see this color. Even Karen. This is the public color that everyone can see. So, here's what Gabriel and Moonbeam are going to do to create a shared secret color that only they know that Karen doesn't, without communicating anything that's invisible to other. So any communication that Gabriel makes to Moonbeam is going to also be visible to Karen. Okay, so Gabriel, why don't you come up? And so now you guys need to stand up again and turn around. So this is now Gabriel's going to mix some paints in his mind. It's behind a curtain. So he can mix paints on his own. This is a private process, and he's going to use public information. So he's going to use the public color, and he's going to mix it with his own color. Okay, so this is Gabriel's mind right here. So what's your color again? Don't say it. So this is Gabriel's private color. He's going to put in one pot, one tube of that private color. And now he's going to take the public color. Teal. And he's going to mix in one pot of that. And that's what it looks like. Yeah, see, he actually did mix it. You can see the color kind of changing. Okay, so now that he's mixed that, he's going to close the curtain of his mind. He just mixed it in private. And now you can go sit down. Sorry. Okay, so now he mixed it, and he's going to take that color and put it out for everyone to see. So Karen and Moonbeam, you can now turn around. There is Gabriel's public-private mixture. So that this is teal mixed with his ultra-secret private color. So can either of you guys tell which color is his ultra-secret private color? No, they can't. Karen can't tell. Why can't she tell? Because you can't unmix paint. She can say, okay, well, she can't divide by teal. She can't, like, remove all the teal from that color and see what Gabriel's private secret, ultra-secret color was. So now we're going to have Moonbeam do the same thing and create a public-private mixture. So now Karen and Gabriel turn around while we go behind the curtain of Moonbeam's mind. So this is your mind. Where was it? There. Nice. Okay, so this is her private color. She's going to add one tube of that and then take the public color, teal. And add one tube of that. And then she's going to close the curtain of her mind. All the mixing was done in private. We can even see the RGB values. Okay, now you can go back. And Karen and Gabriel can turn around again. So they can now see Moonbeam's public and private mixture. Public-private mixture. So, Karen, I want you to tell me now, can you tell what Moonbeam's private color was?
No. Gosh. Maybe bluish.
Bluish.
But
yeah.
I don't know which one.
It would be that minus teal, but again, you can't subtract colors. You can't undo mixing paints. Okay. So now they haven't, so have Gabriel and Moonbeam created a shared secret? Not yet. Everyone knows this stuff. Everyone can see this. There's no shared secret. So here's the trick. Here's the kicker. Here's how you solve it. What Gabriel's now going to come up and do is he's going to mix his private color with Moonbeam's public-private mixture. And then Moonbeam's going to do the same thing, and what's going to come out? The same thing from both. So you'll see this. So Gabriel, why don't you come back into the curtain of your mind? So this is... he's not going to see... Okay, so we're going to mix... Actually, the way this program works, I have to... Actually, sorry, Gabriel, why don't you go back over there? Sorry. I have to go and do it manually. So now the audience is going to see what's going to happen, but Gabriel's going to take this mixture. So we're going to recreate Moonbeam's private mixture. So remember, Gabriel can't see... All he can see is this color right here. But he's going to add to that his own, which is this one. So when he adds his own color, So when he adds his own color to Moonbeam's private mixture, he gets this olive greenish. And he never knew what went into her mixture. Oh, I gotta close the curtain. He just added his own color to that, and that's what came out. Okay, so you guys can all turn around. Karen, yeah, you can turn around, Karen, but sorry. Karen and Moonbeam can't turn around yet, because this is in Gabriel's mind right now. This is Gabriel's... Gabriel has created this on his own. He doesn't need to share this with anyone else. So Gabriel, you can stay facing the stage. Now here's what Moonbeam's going to do. Moonbeam's going to take... So we're going to recreate Gabriel's public-private mixture here, which had... Let's just recall what it had in it. This. And teal. So his private color and teal. So this here is Gabriel's public-private mixture. And Moonbeam is going to add to this hers, which is this one. Oh, yeah, sorry. Gabriel, you can't... Sorry, you can't see this. Moonbeam... Well, no, actually Moonbeam can't look, because then she'd see Gabriel's... This is the problem with the demonstration, but what did Moonbeam just get when she added her... Okay, Moonbeam, you can turn around now, and so can Gabriel. What did Moonbeam get when she added her color to Gabriel's public-private mixture? So she took a pot of Gabriel's public-private mixture and added her color and got this. What do you notice about these two things? They're the same color. So Gabriel had this in his, you know, in his pocket, and he mixed this in the curtain of his mind. He mixed this color. Moonbeam also mixed the same color. Karen could never see what was happening behind their curtain, so she never... She now doesn't know this color, which is the same as this color. So this is now their shared secret color. Karen couldn't see that. Oops. Sorry. Okay, so the only thing Karen ever saw were the top two. And there's no way, knowing those top two, that she could have created either the bottom shared secret color that they had, or figured out what their ultra-secret private colors were. Okay, thanks, guys. You did great. All right. So, is there any way that Karen could have could have hacked this, could have determined the shared secret color. For example, what if she took the two public-private mixtures that she saw and added them together? Would she get something like this? Let's try it. So this one has light green and teal, and this one had light blue and teal. So if we put in one part light blue, one part light green, well, then we'd have to put two parts teal in, because they each had one teal in their public-private mixture. So this now has one part light blue, one part light green, and two parts teal. So it's actually different. If you mix the two public-private mixtures together, you don't get this. It looks similar. Well, but what's different about the top one than this one? Yes?
It's a lighter shade.
It's too tealy. It's got too much teal in it. It's got two parts teal and one part each of the private color. So just mixing those two together doesn't get you the secret color. And we can look at the RGB values to verify that these are actually different. This one, these are the RGB values, and this one, these are the RGB values, and you can see that they're actually different colors. When I say RGB, that means red, green, blue. It means how intense the red is, how intense the green is, and how intense the blue is. So if Karen just mixed the public-private mixtures together, she couldn't do it. It doesn't get her anything. It's too tealy. Okay. So that's the idea. Does anyone have questions about this process? What happened here? Okay. Hope it wasn't too confusing. So now Gabriel and Moonbeam established a shared secret color. I'll just draw the diagram of what happened, just to refresh everyone. So teal was the public color. So this was public information. And Gabriel, his private color was... What was your private color, Gabriel? Green? Light green YS. Whatever the YS means. What was your favorite color, Moonbeam? Light ultramarine blue. Light ultramarine blue. So what's the first thing that we did? Well, the first thing we did was Gabriel mixed his light green and teal to create this one. And so whatever this color is, we can just write down its RGB values. Right? That's Gabriel's light green and teal. And it had RGB of 4, 116, 43. So... And now, okay, I'm going to undo this. So Karen attempted to hack this by... Okay, so now this color right here was Moonbeam's public-private mixture. It has one part light ultramarine blue and one part teal. And its RGB values are 680, 113. And then what did we do? Then Gabriel took Moonbeam's public-private mixture. So this is called the public-private mixture because it's a mixture of the public teal and the private light ultramarine blue. And he mixed it with his own ultra-secret color. And what did he get? He got this jungle green 107045. And when Moonbeam mixed her public-private mixture, when she mixed her private color with Gabriel's public-private mixture, what did she get? She got this jungle green, 10, 70, 45. Karen doesn't know this. Karen didn't see this because she never knew what Moonbeam's private mixture was. So she saw Moonbeam take some of this and go behind the curtain of her mind and create this. Gabriel went behind the curtain and created that. So Karen never knows this shared secret color, 107045. So this is, I'll say SSC, for shared secret color. And so now if they wanted to communicate their credit card color, they could say, take our shared secret color and add, you know, 10, add 13, 42, 100 to the RGB values, and that's my credit card color.
And say that out loud.
And they could say that out loud, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, they can. Gabriel can now shout to Moonbeam, you just take our shared secret color that only you and me know and do something to it, and that's my credit card color. So Gabriel and Moonbeam, not having any prior secrets, not having any prior exchanges, and only exchanging information in public, have created this shared secret color. So that's like that kind of, this is the process of creating a shared secret key that is used in much of encryption. So whenever you go to an HTTPS website, that means it's secure. Like if you go on your bank website or something like that, the S stands for secure, and it means that something like this is going on. But not with colors, because it's with numbers. So what we're going to do now is we're going to think about what was important in this process and how we might be able to recreate that using numbers. Because RGB values aren't good enough. Computers can't communicate. I mean, they can communicate in RGB values maybe, but like there's only like a 255 possibilities for red, green, and blue. So colors don't cut it. We need numbers. We need to create a shared secret number. So what were the two properties of this process? What allowed Gabriel and Moonbeam to do this mixing behind their curtains and get the same thing? Okay, so well, first of all, what do we need? Or what did we have that allowed this to work? Can't be reversed. So the private process can't be reversed. Why was that? Why did we have that here? Because you can't unmix paint. Right? When Karen saw the public-private mixtures, she couldn't take that information plus the public information and get back the private numbers. She couldn't divide by teal. She couldn't subtract out the teal. She couldn't undo the mixing. Yeah?
If that was in real life, and you actually mix the paint, couldn't you use a centrifuge to separate paint?
I don't know. That's an excellent question. Yeah, you probably could. So this process is just an example. It's a hypothetical. So let's say there's no centrifuges in the room. Then you can't do it. You can't do it just using, I mean, maybe you could like shake it around really fast. But yeah, but that's a good question. It might be undoable, but it's difficult. So actually, because of your question, I'm not going to say can't be reversed. I'm going to say is infeasible to reverse. So yeah, you can go out, you can buy a centrifuge, you can come back, you can do stuff with the paints and eventually get it, maybe. But it's going to take too long. By that point, they've already created a shared secret, done the transaction, and moved on with their life. So what else allowed this to work? What was the trick? Yeah?
Mixture of public and private.
So that's what we had. Yeah, so we had the mixture of public and private. Then what did we do to that?
We mixed it with another.
The other private. And that was the same as mixing the public and private with the first private. So why were those the same? What? You. Exactly. You have to be able to mix paints in either order. So if you do light ultramarine blue and then teal and then light green YS, that has to be the same as light green YS and then teal and then light ultramarine blue. So you have to be able to do it in any order. So the process can be done. In either order. Or any order, sure. So we need to find a mathematical process that satisfies these properties, and as soon as we do that, we can use this outline, pretending they're colors, and get a usable way to establish a shared secret key. And so the first people who came up with this, they figured out a way to do this mathematically, worked for government communications headquarters, which is a top secret building in England that works to keep the government communication secure. Called GCHQ, Government Communications Headquarters, and it was top secret. People there figured out how to do this, but it was top secret, so no one knew. And then these guys published a paper on it. They're academics, and they published a paper on it, so they get all the credit, even though these top secret government workers had done it like years before them. So it's now called the Diffie-Hellman key exchange. So this just goes to show you that if you're working for a top secret government agency, you might not get credit for your inventions. But it's cool. So it's now, this is sort of the name for it, even though this guy Diffie and this other guy Hellman, they weren't actually technically the first to come up with the idea. It was the people who were working in the top secret lab. Okay. So that's what the rest of the talk is going to be. At some point, we need to take a break for snacks. Where's Karen? To learn what Diffie and Hellman did, we need to have a little bit of math background and something called clock arithmetic. So here's what it is. So clock arithmetic is what we're doing next. This is what they used. So the way you do clock arithmetic, it's just like regular arithmetic. But at the end of the day, you think about what it would mean on a clock. So replace 12 with 0. And forget about AM and PM. So if I've got a clock, what does the clock now look like? It's got a 0 here instead of a 12. 3 there. It's 6 o'clock, and 6 hours pass. What does the clock read? Just shout it out. Zero. So we say that in clock arithmetic, 6 plus 6 equals 0. Okay, if it's...
shouldn't that be called modular arithmetic?
It is called modular arithmetic. I'm creating a fake name so it's not as like scary sounding. Very good. It's called modular arithmetic. So, okay, you already know this. If you hear someone say modular arithmetic, they're just talking about a clock. If it's 10 o'clock and 4 hours pass, what time is it?
2 o'clock.
So in clock arithmetic, 10 plus 4 equals 2. Okay. So if the day starts at 0 o'clock. Let's say 25 hours pass. What's the clock going to read? So I'll write it down. So the day starts at 0. Twenty-five hours later, the clock reads
1.
So we're going to make a little notation for that. We're going to say that 25 equals 1. And in parentheses, we're going to put clock size 12. Now, this should suggest something to you, that maybe we can use other clock sizes. So in any clock size, you just take the biggest number. So for example, clock size 17. Same idea, but think about a clock with 17 numbers on it, not 12.
Hey, that's modulo, not clock size.
Right. So I'm saying clock size, but the correct technical word is modulo. Good. So I've got a little thing here that I found on the internet. So this is it doesn't replace the 0 with the 12. Just think of, but this can actually create other clock sizes. So let's say you've got a clock size 17. And you're starting at 0 o'clock. And let's say, 43 hours pass. It's going to take a little while. Okay, so you went all the way around. So you went back to 0. You went all the way around again. That was 34 hours, 17 times 2.
Stops at 9.
Exactly. Stops at 9. Because 43 is all the way around once, all the way around twice, and then 9 more hours. So we say that 43 equals 9, clock size 17, or modulo 17. Okay, so that's clock arithmetic or modular arithmetic. And you can also do multiplication. So if I did, let's say 20 times 2. So on the one hand, well, what's 20 times 2? 40. And then in clock size 17, what's that?
6.
Very good, because 17, if you go around twice, it's 34, and then 6 more gets you a 40.
But so 17 times 2 plus 6 equals 40.
Yes! Excellent. Is there another way we could have done that calculation? Well, what if we had taken 20, looked at its clock size, and then multiplied? So what's 20 in clock size 17? 3, because it's 3 past, you go all the way around once, and then it's 3. So on the other hand, what is 3 times 2? And then with clock size 17, what is 6? It's just 6 again. So this is still, I mean, 3 times 2 is always 6, which always equals 6, but it also equals 6 in clock size 17, because that's all less than 17.
Because if it's less than 17, then it's the same number.
Exactly. Good. You don't have to do anything to it if it's less than 17. So does anyone notice anything? These came out the same. Why do those come out the same? Why can we do the multiplication and then do the clock reading? Or do the clock reading first, get the 3, and then do the multiplication? Yes, you.
Because it's commutative.
Why is it commutative? That's what I'm asking.
Because 20 modulo 17 is 3, and 40 modulo 17 is 6, and 40 divided by 20 is 2. And 6 divided by 3 is 2.
Well, uh-huh. So I want to... So you're sort of saying that it's true while you're saying it's true. I want to think about why it's true. And, I mean, what this means here is add 20 to itself 2 times. And if you have 20 plus 20, that means let 20 hours go by, and then let 20 hours go by again. But each time you let 20 hours go by, you only get 3 past start. And then if you let 20 hours go by again, you get 3 past that. So the reason why you can do it in either order is because it all comes down to addition. And in addition, every time you add 17, it becomes 0. So the point here, okay, so you can convince yourselves, I guess. So can multiply and then clock read. Either order. And the word commutative actually isn't quite right. Because we're not saying that 3 times 2 is equal to 2 times 3. That's what commutativity is. What we're saying is that the process of taking a clock reading can be done before or after you multiply. So those two operations of reading the clock and multiplication, those two things can be done in either order. Okay, so maybe this would be a good time to stop for snacks. And then when we come back, I'll show you what Diffie-Hellman did. We're going to do these 3 quick exercises just to check our understanding of clock arithmetic. So everyone should have a paper, piece of paper. So take your piece of paper and write the numbers 1, 2, and 3 along the side like this. And see if you can work out the answers to these 3 problems in clock arithmetic. And we'll just take a few minutes and do this, and we'll walk around and help you. And if you've got the answer, don't shout it out, because you don't want to ruin anyone else's fun. Please just do it on your own. You can talk to your neighbor about help, to get help, but don't shout it out because you don't want to ruin it. Do you want to take a picture?
Oh, yeah, cool. Thanks.
Just standing in front of the board?
Yeah, yeah, make it look like, you know, it's working. Yeah. Oh. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Cool.
How you doing? Good work. You don't need to copy the question. You can just write the answer.
So if you did that, one way it is easier.
So if you're bored, one thing you can start thinking
Does it matter?
I don't know.
So if you multiply them out and then do the clock size,
okay.
Is that any different than looking at the numbers and both numbers in clock size 13 and then multiplying? Mm-hmm. So 25 times 18 is 450,
okay.
I think. So if you take that and you reduce, if you look at the clock reading,
mm-hmm.
is that going to be different than if you take 60 and look at the clock reading? Let's try it. See if you can figure out how many times 13 goes into 450 with remainder. So did anyone get an answer for the first one? Yes. You. Striped shirt. Yeah. 60? Okay. Did anyone else get a different answer? Yeah? You? Yep.
8.
Did anyone else get a different answer? Yeah. You?
I got 8.
8? Okay, that's the same. Did anyone, did you get a different answer? 35? Okay. Not sure how you got 35. So check your, see if you can find your mistake. Pretend I would pay you $1,000 if you found your mistake.
But I'm not, I think I did it wrong, but my math was not right. I just did.
Okay. So did anyone get 450? I got 450. Yeah.
I got 450, but then I divided it by 13, and then I got 8. That's
okay. Good. So what? What? How can we reconcile these three answers? They all. Well, this it's in clock size 13. So are these really different? They're different numbers. They look like different numbers. Are they really different?
No.
Let's see what the clock tells us. Let's see. So we're in clock size 13. So let's say we start time 0 and we go forward 60. What will the clock read? 8. So, what does that mean? It means that these two are actually equal.
13 plus 6 equals 8.
What'd you say?
13
plus 60. Well, yes. Well, yes. In clock size. Okay, are these equal? Well, let's see. Let's not do animation. Okay, it's going backward. I don't know why it's going backward. Okay, it seems to think that 450 is also 8. So these are the same answer. They are equal. We can put an equal sign as long as in parentheses next to it we write clock size 8. So all these answers are the same. Good work, guys. So what is different about these answers? Well, to get this one, what would you do? You probably reduce this to 12, because 25 equals 12, and then multiplied by what?
5.
5, because 18 is 5. So if you reduce this and reduce this, it's called reducing if you look at the clock reading. So clock reading this, clock reading that, then multiply, you get 60. And then reduce that further, because you know that 13 times 4 is 52, and there's 8 left, so you get 8. If you just multiply 25 by 18, you get 450, but it's the same thing. It's still 8. So you can clock read first, you can clock read second. Okay, did anyone get an answer for number 2? Yes, green shirt back there.
7.
How'd you get that?
I divided 137 by 13 and got 10 with a remainder of 7.
The remainder. Good. So what we're really, that brings me to my next point, which is excellent, which is what we're really doing here is we're dividing and looking at the remainder. She divided 137 by 13. It went in 10 full times, but there were 7 remaining, because 13 times 10 is 130. So there's 7 remaining. So what we're really looking is at the remainder after dividing by 13. Okay, so did anyone get an answer for number 3? Yes, in the Zelda sweatshirt. 1,841. Okay, good. Did anyone get a different answer? Yes.
6.
Well, 6. Did anyone get a different answer? Yes. Yeah.
10.
Okay, so these are not equal in clock size 13. So one of these two is wrong. So one of you guys is wrong. And did anyone else get a different answer? What did you write? I saw you write something. That, yeah. You got 6. Okay, well, what did you write before 6? 32. Okay. Where did you get that 32? You simplified the 15s to 2. Good. So this is 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2. So he took each 15 and reduced it to 2, and then did all the multiplying and got this, and then reduced it to 6. Because 13 times 2 is 26, and there's 6 left over. Okay. And so I think this 10 is wrong. I'm not sure about this one. You'd have to do a little work to get that. All right. Are there any questions on these? These are just to get us going again. All right. So, okay, now I'm going to tell you how to do the Diffie-Hellman. Well, actually, one last thing before I do Diffie-Hellman is exponents. So what is this thing here? Is there a quicker way to write this? Does anyone know a quicker way to write that? Yeah.
15 to the power 5.
Exactly. This is 15 to the fifth power. So this exponent here just means multiply 15 by itself 5 times. So, okay, that's what an exponent is. And so Diffie-Hellman, that process, instead of mixing paints, we're going to exponentiate in a prime number clock size. So here's what you need to do for Diffie-Hellman. So I'm going to draw the same picture that I drew before with the colors, but instead now we're going to use the actual information that the Diffie-Hellman exchange does. So what did we write last time? What was the public information from last time? You can just shout it out.
Teal.
Okay, so Diffie-Hellman key exchange uses two pieces of information. One is a prime number. And the other one, so one piece of information too, and the second one is what's called a primitive root modulo p. Okay, so now you probably shouldn't know what that means. We're going to explain that now. We're going to learn that now. So what is a primitive root modulo p? Well, before I tell you what a primitive root modulo p is, I want to show you a calculation that I did earlier. Okay. So what I did is in clock size 17, I wrote down all the powers of 3 and all the powers of 4. So let's try and figure out what this says. Does anyone know what 3 cubed is? Shout it out.
27.
Good. Does anyone know what 3 squared is? Does anyone know what 3 to the 1 is? Does anyone know what 3 to the 0 is?
1.
Good. Why isn't it 0? Yes, you. Yes, but 1 times 0 is 1. Well, okay, I'm not really... I'll just say the way that... What's going on in my head. So, how do you get from here to here? You don't add 3. You multiply by 3. How do you get from here to here? Right, and how do you get from here? So how should you get from here to here? It should be multiplying by 3. So if this were 0, that wouldn't work. So
because 0 times 3 is not 3, it's still 0.
Exactly. So in order to prevent that from working, we need to have a 1 there. So, right, so 3 to 0 means no 3s, but not 0. It just means no multiples of 3 have been applied to 1. Okay. So, in clock size 17, notice that the first 3 powers of 3, giant pink hand, the first 3 powers of 3, so who can't see that? Raise your hand if you can't see what's on the top of the board. Okay. The first 3 powers of 3 are 1, 3, and 9. What's the next power of 3?
10.
It's 10 because we're in clock size 17. I picked the clock size 17 and I started writing out powers of 3. So, yeah, I just took this and I took the clock reading. 27 hours past 0, it's going to read 10. The next one is 13. How did I get that? Well, I multiplied this by 3 and got 30, and then reduced in clock size 17, that's 13 past 17, so it's 13. What about 3 to the 5th? 5. So what happens when I take all the powers of 3? What do you notice? Does anyone notice anything?
I do.
What do you notice?
The most recent one, and the one two columns before it, determines what the next one is. Well, 1 plus 9 is 10, 3 plus 10 is 13, 9 plus 13 is 5.
24
modulo 7 is 5.
Oh, you're right.
Etc.
That's a good point. Nice. Does anyone notice anything else? That's an excellent observation. There was something else I was getting at. Yeah. Very good. They're all there. So, yeah, what were you going to say?
You don't get a zero.
Right. You'll never get a zero. Because taking powers, you start at 1, and you're always multiplying by non-zero things. So you're never going to get, you're never going to get a zero by exponentiating. Because you're just multiplying non-zero things together. Okay. So, yes, I like your observation a lot. Good question. What is 3 to the 16? How do we compute 3 to the 16? What would be one way to do that? A quick easy way, yeah.
A calculator.
but could a calculator tell you what it is in clock size 17?
No.
That's what we're looking for here. We want clock size 17. Yeah. So his observation is a very good one, and it's actually correct, but we haven't proved it yet. So we don't know that this is always true. We know that it's true for all the numbers we see here, but we have no way of knowing that it's going to be true for the next one. It is. He's correct. But supposing we didn't know that, what would be a quick way to compute it? Yeah. So if you multiplied 3 by itself 16 times and then had a way to divide by 17 and see the remainder, that would be a good way to do it. I've already done 3 to the 15, so if I multiply this number by 3, then take remainder when I divide by 17, I'm there, right? So I was just saying, so 3 to the 16 is 3 times 3 to the 15, right, because that gets me one exponent higher, which is, well, we know what that is in clock size 17. It's 3 times 6, right, clock size 17, which is what? 18, which is what? 1. Okay. So this answers your question of what's 3 to the 16. So why didn't I write it on my list? I'll write it in now, but how come I didn't need to write it on the list? What's going to happen now? It's going to start over. Because if I took 3 to the 17, that's the same as multiplying 3 to the 16 by 3, and then reducing, taking remainder when you divide by 17. If I took 3 to the 18, it's multiplying by 3. 3 to the 19 multiplying by 3. So I'm going to get this same cycle happening again if I keep going. So these are all the powers of 3 in clock size 17. And the observation that is most important here is that you get all the numbers between 1 and 16. You get all the non-zero numbers in clock size, all the non-zero numbers on the clock. So that's the observation I'm going to write. Yeah.
Is this true for anything?
Good question. Yes, I'm about to say something about it. So get all the numbers 1. So all the numbers on the clock besides 0. Okay, now let's look at powers of 4. So over here I've written powers of 4. So 4 to the 0 is 1 because anything to the 0 is 1. What's 4 squared? 4 to the 1. 4. What's 4 squared? 16. What's 16 in clock size 17?
16.
What's 4 cubed? Well, 4 times 16 48. I mean 64. Yeah, and then when you reduce 17, it's 13. So I've written out, and then what happens if you take the next highest power, 4 to the 4th, 13 times 4,
52.
Which is 1 more than 51, which is a multiple of 17. So we get 1 again. Now what's going to happen? It's going to repeat, because if you multiply by 4, you get 4 again. If you multiply by 4, you get 16. If you multiply by the same thing that's going to happen, that happened before, is going to happen again, all the way down. And no matter how far you go, you're only going to get these four numbers. So here we only get four numbers, four of them. So there's something special about 3 that when we took powers of it, we got all the numbers on the clock besides 0. When we did 4, it didn't work. And so your question was, does this work for any prime number? Like, for any prime base. So, well, first of all, the answer is yes. There is, so, okay. Yes. Yes. Good. So what is a prime number? Can anyone remember what a prime number is? Yes, back there. You. Yeah, you. Yes. Good. A prime number is a number such that its only factors are 1 and itself. So what's an example of a prime? The first prime. Is how about 1? There's no factors other than 1 in itself. No. Mathematicians got together a while ago and said, we're not going to have 1 be a prime. It just creates too much confusion. 2 is the first prime number. What's the next prime number? U.
3.
Good. W. Next one after that?
5.
After that?
7.
7.
11.
17.
23.
So 17 is a prime number.
Yeah.
So this situation, when the clock size is a prime number, it turns out that there's always this type of number. There's always a number that when you take powers of it gives you all the non-zero numbers on the clock. And that is a primitive root modulo p. Root. So, just to write down what I just said, this is a number whose exponents give all non-zero clock digits. Okay. Just erase this stuff. All right. So, can anyone give me an example of a primitive root modulo 17? Someone besides anyone, someone in the back rows. Can anyone back there give me an example of a primitive root modulo 17? Hint. It's up there. Yeah. Three. Good. Because there it goes. It's a number whose exponents give all non-zero clock digits. When we take exponents of 3, we get all the numbers between 1 and 16. Question. Pop quiz. Is 4 a primitive root modulo 17? No. Why not? Good. Because when you exponentiate it, you only get these 4 clock numbers. You're only going to, the clock is only ever going to stop on those 4 numbers when you take powers of 4. Yeah. Question. So the prime number is P. So this is, pick a prime number, like, for example, 17. And then we're going to call this one G. So the P is the prime number. G is the primitive root modulo that prime number. So in this, for example, we could take P equals 17, because that's a prime number. And then what would be an example of a primitive root modulo 17? 3. Okay, so that's what a primitive root modulo a prime number is. And you're going to have to trust me when I say that any prime number has a primitive root. It's not always clear. I mean, maybe if I tried, what's another prime number? How about 31? Maybe if I tried 31 and I started exponentiating, taking exponents of numbers on the clock, maybe I would never find a number that gave me all the clock numbers. But trust me, you can always find. So this always exists. So it's a theorem in math, in number theory, or in abstract algebra, which you would learn about in Math 343. A primitive root modulo a prime number always exists. So if you want to find one, just start exponentiating. And when you find one that whose exponents give you everything, you're done. You've found a primitive root. So are there any questions about what a primitive root is, modulo a prime? Because that's going to be that T. This is teal, right? This is the public information. Okay, now how, using the public information, can we create public-private mixtures that allow us to establish a shared secret? Okay. So Gabriel is trying to communicate with Moonbeam. So what was the private information that Gabriel and Moonbeam had before? Yeah?
Your favorite color?
A color. A secret color that no one else knew. So this time, the private information is not going to be a color. It's going to be a number. Any number between 0 and 16. Well, I'll say 1 and 16. Any number between 1 and 16. So any non-zero clock number. And let's give that a name. How about A? We'll call it A. And Moonbeam is also going to pick one, her favorite color, any number B, that's a B, between 1 and 16. Between. So now, I'm about to tell you what mixing is going to mean. How are we going to mix teal with yellow, green, I forget what green he had. How are we going to mix P and G with A? We're going to take G and raise it to the power of A. And that's going to be Gabriel's public-private mixture. And Moonbeam, so, okay, how is Moonbeam going to create a public-private mixture? Moonbeam, can you, do you know how you'll create your... Sorry, can you say it a little bit louder? Right, so to do that, so Gabriel took the G and raised it to his number. So what are you going to do? You're going to take the G and raise it to your number, exactly. G to the B. So this is Moonbeam's public-private mixture. Okay, so that's what mixing means. It means exponentiating by your thing. So... I wish I had a longer board. This is how they're going to create their shared secret key. What is Gabriel going to do with Moonbeam's public-private mixture? How is he going to mix his private data in with Moonbeam's public-private mixture? Does anyone know? Yeah. He's going to take his private number and exponentiate it with Moonbeam's public-private. So the same way he mixed his private color with Moonbeam's public-private mixture, he's going to take Moonbeam's public-private mixture and mix it, meaning exponentiate it. So he's going to take this number and exponentiate it with his private thing. So he's going to take this G to the B and raise that to the A. That's what those parentheses mean. Okay. So now can anyone guess what Moonbeam is going to do with Gabriel's public-private mixture? What Moonbeam is going to do with G to the A? Yes.
G to the A raised to the power of B.
Good. So when we did this with colors, what was the magical thing that happened that made this work? What about the outcome was so special? Yeah. They were the same. Right. So when we got that forest green by doing this and by doing that, so that they had the shared secret color. So the question now is this the same as that?
Yes.
The answer is yes. And so let's now do an example and think about, as we do the example, let's think about why these things should be the same. Oh, wow. We're almost done. Okay. So to save time, I might just... show you the example. So if we have clock size 17, we've already seen that 3 is a primitive root modulo 17. And instead of Alice and Bob, we're going to have Gabriel and Moonbeam. So let's say Gabriel had his secret number be 4. and Moonbeam had her secret number be 5. Then how would Gabriel take this public information and create a public-private mixture? He'd take 3 and raise it to the 4 to get 3 to the 4th, which is 13. And now this number is public. He throws that out there for everyone to see. Just like he made that public-private mixture, once he mixed it, he sent it and put it in the middle of the room so that Moonbeam could then make her public-private mixture. And when Moonbeam gets G, she raises it to her number and gets 5 in clock size 17. So then Gabriel takes his number A and this public-private mixture and then takes 5 to the 4th, raises 5 to his number, and gets 625, which is 13. Moonbeam takes Gabriel's public-private mixture, raises it to her number, gets 13 to the 5th, which is this 3-digit number, and then gets 13. And so they're both the same number. It appears that this private mixing process can be done in any order, because you get 13 either way. How do we really know? I've made a little chart here to illustrate why we know that. Well, when we take 3 to the 5th to the 4th, we can think of that as 5 to the 4th, because remember, 3 to the 5th is 5. And then compute it the way they did. But really what we're doing is just multiplying 3 by itself 20 times. 3 to the 5th to the 4th, 23s. Right? There's 3 to the 5th times 3 to the 5th times 3 to the 5th times 3 to the 5th. And that's 3 to the 20th, which happens to come out to 13. On the other hand, going the other direction, so remember, Moonbeam took the 3 to the 4th, which was 13, and raised that to the 5th, which was her private number. And so she got 4, so she got 5 copies of 3 to the 4th multiplied by each other. And that came out to this 3-digit number, which reduced to 13. But we can also think about that, if you hold off on this, on turning it into 13, that it's just, again, 4 copies of 3 multiplied by itself 5 times, which is 20 copies of 3, which is 13. So you can see 3 to the 20th and 3 to the 20th are definitely both going to reduce to the same thing in clock arithmetic. So we really do get a process that can be done in any order. And so the very last thing I want to say in the talk is that you can't feasibly exponentiate clock numbers. The process of Karen trying to guess what number Alice had picked, that's called a discrete logarithm problem. And it's something that computers are very slow at doing. Basically, the only way to do it is to guess. Is to take 3 and raise it to every single number and do trial and error and see if you ever get 13 by raising 3 to higher powers. So because that's a difficult problem, so for example, if I had a prime number, today we have prime numbers that are several hundred million digits long. To do trial and error on all those digits, on all those numbers that are possible, on that clock size, would take about the age of the universe. So, and that's basically the best way to try and hack this. So this is basically unhackable as long as you have a very large prime number, because a large prime number means there's lots of possibilities for private numbers for Gabriel and Moonbeam. Okay, sorry I ran out of time at the end there. That's the Diffie-Hellman key exchange, and that's what you use when you buy things on Amazon. Thanks. We're out of time.